The views expressed on this program are the views of the individual broadcaster and do not necessarily reflect the view of Wesleyan University or the WESU management. Hello, and welcome to Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, a progressive-minded radio show about faith and action, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, and WESUFM.org, providing community radio that matters, and rebroadcast on the University of Connecticut's WHUS, 91.7 FM Storrs, and WHUS.org, UConn's Radio for the People. I'm Maria Johnson. Today, dispatches from Rome, where last week the organization Women's Ordination Worldwide held a parallel celebration to one held in Vatican City. In Vatican City, it was a jubilee for priests. Across town, it was a, sounds to me like more fun, jubilee for women priests. The latter featured, among other highlights, panel discussions with noted thinkers on the subject of women's ordination, a cocktail hour with drinks named for some of Pope Francis's more disappointing references to women's place in the church, a citywide display of posters, and then the attendees' presence in St. Peter's Square, since, after all, Pope Francis said all were welcome. We'll hear from three participants, in order, Father Tony Flannery, a Redemptorist priest who's been forbidden to practice his ministry until he recants his support for women's ordination, and who wonders if the institutional church needs to implode and then rise anew. And then we'll hear from someone who's becoming practically a regular guest, Miriam Deignan, spokeswoman for Women's Ordination Worldwide. She gets on the line to give us the whole lay of the land for the three-day conference. And finally, Jamie Manson, the National Catholic Reporter columnist who's got all the qualifications for the priesthood except for male genitalia, and who recently wrote a column asserting it's time to be honest about Pope Francis and women. It's an enlightening episode, notwithstanding the less-than-stellar quality of the audio, some of it due to crowd noise, some of it to garden variety static, since, as WESU's general manager Ben Michael points out, there's a million miles of wires between here and Rome. Thanks for your patience. Back in a moment with Father Tony.
There's no listener-supported community radio without listener support. Donate online at WESUFM.org.
Hi, Maria.
How
are
you? Hello. Oh, it's an honor to be talking with you. My goodness.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, that's a good start.
Shall I call you Father Tony? What do you prefer?
Tony.
Tony. Bless your heart.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. I want to say just at the outset how grateful, and I think I speak for many when I say how grateful I am for the sacrifice you're making on behalf of the cause of women's ordination.
Thank you very much, Maria. Thank you.
Are you suffering because of it?
I was going to say, are we on record or are we not? I'm not really, to be honest with you, Maria.
Really?
You see, this has gone on now for over 4 years.
Right.
This meaning my being forbidden to minister as a priest.
Yes.
And my life has moved on a lot. I've gone into very much involved in the whole reform movement. I'm meeting a whole new range of people that I would never have been met or come to know if I'd remained ministering as a priest in the traditional fashion. So in a lot of ways, to have such an injection of a new life, a new energy, a new perspective at this stage in my life is in a lot of ways a gift. So in that sense, Maria, if that makes sense to you.
It does.
In that sense, I don't feel particularly deprived, to be honest.
Wow. So isn't that an interesting thing, that it's turned out to be a blessing in your life?
Yes,
that
exactly.
Yeah, wow. But what a loss for the church, I have to say.
Well, Well, I would hope that from the perspective from which I'm working now, that maybe I might be able to have a bit more influence in the church than I would have had if I had remained as what I was doing.
Well, good point. Good point.
You wouldn't have heard of me, Maria. I wouldn't be speaking at events like I am today. So if in whatever efforts we're making, we can bring about some real change in the church, that will ultimately be maybe the best thing.
Absolutely. All right.
So maybe in a way, this is what the Spirit is doing.
You know, I want to believe that.
There's a lot of noise in the background. Is that a problem for you? Should I walk away from
walking
noise?
Away wouldn't be bad, but I think we can hear you.
I'll just walk down the courtyard here.
Okay.
We had a roundtable conference, and there's a bit of a celebration after it out in the courtyard.
Good.
Running away from it now.
How do you feel that the event is going?
This afternoon was really interesting.
Tell me, what was the theme?
The theme really was the women's place in the church, and the whole issue of the equality of women, having their voices heard, having the whole feminine dimension, feminine sensibility becoming a reality in our church. And in order to do that, because of the structures we have in the church at the moment, where only people who are ordained to priestly ministry can be in positions of decision-making, it would seem as if the only path by which women can begin to exercise real influence in the church is through ordained ministry. Now, I think most of the speakers today would regret that that is the fact.
Yes.
Because really, the desire is not particularly to become part of the priestly caste, but the desire is that as I said, the feminine perspective, sensibility is fully heard and integrated into the life of the church. Because the church for centuries has been greatly starved of that very important human dimension.
You know, I'm going to be asking Jamie about her column basically telling us that we should abandon all hope.
Jamie was a little less hopeful than the rest of us, but maybe more realistic, I don't know.
Well, that's...
One of the journalists present,
you know,
put that question in a very blunt fashion. He's an Irishman like myself, Paddy Agnew. He works for the Irish Times. He said, look, what his question was, I don't see any reason for hope around here. Where are you seeing it?
Exactly. I mean, so when you say it was an interesting session, I want to believe you're saying that there is cause for hope, but how can there be?
I'm still a priest, even though I'm not allowed to minister publicly, I'm still a member of the Redemptorists. If I did what I'm doing today 4 or 5 years ago, the Redemptorists would be ordered to dismiss me from the priesthood, and I would probably be excommunicated.
Okay.
I don't expect either of those things to happen now. If they do, and that's okay. But I don't expect they will, because there is a very much different climate in the church.
Right. Interesting.
Francis hasn't as yet managed to change structures, or obviously change doctrine. There's a fair possibility that he won't do either for whatever years he has left. He has certainly opened the church up to some real discussion on issues that we could not talk about before.
Well, that is worth something, yes.
That is worth something. And the other thing that is very much worth something that has been happening for the last 20 years or more is the growth of feminist theologians and the influence of feminist theologians.
Wow.
So that increasingly the female voice is being heard and being influential in the whole theological world. And also in the spiritual world, when I was flying over from Ireland to here yesterday, I was reading Tom Roberts' book on John Chichester.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the power of that woman and the impact she is having and has had is enormous in the church today.
Wow.
And there is that, increasingly, that type of thing is happening. So yeah, I'm hopeful. I don't expect to see much in my lifetime in the sense of, you know, structural change or any real... I won't see women ordained or that in my lifetime.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe that's not as important.
Interesting. Expand a little on that. Are you saying that it's not important?
Maybe it's not as important as I'd see it in my lifetime.
Oh, okay. So it's not important that you see it in your lifetime, but you're not saying it's not important.
Well, it is absolutely important.
Okay.
If it happens.
Okay.
In fact, unless the church fully embraces the equality of women, it will cease to exist as anything really significant in the world. I see it as strong as that, because the whole momentum of life has moved on.
Yeah.
I mean, I know I'm talking now of the developed world more than of the less developed world. But that is the whole momentum, that massive change is taking place on the question of the equality of women. Like I see it in Ireland, the young generation of women in Ireland, they just take equality as a natural, obvious thing.
Right.
And the notion that a church would still be hanging on to the idea that there is a leadership role that only men can participate in, they would regard as so completely preposterous.
Yeah.
And there's no way that the church is going to speak in future to that generation.
Right.
Unless it changes.
Right.
So it's enormously important that it happens, and I'd love to see it happening tomorrow. But realistically, the church didn't change that quickly.
You know, I want to explain why I misunderstood you a minute ago when you said maybe it's not important, because there is a book by Gary Willis called Why Priests.
You know, I know.
Are you familiar
with it? Yes.
I mean, maybe that's the most radical direction of all for things to evolve toward.
Yeah, and I was saying that at the conference, at the talk, that priesthood as we have it now, this male celibate clerical model, that's on its way out. That's not going to last. I know they're still flocking into seminaries in Nigeria and places like that. That's really a relic of the past. In Ireland, the priesthood, as we know it, is practically dead.
And so making now, it co-ed is not maybe the answer.
No. The answer has to come in a whole new model of ministry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think maybe it's not that important that it happens this week, because I think maybe the collapse of the system has to get much more advanced.
Interesting.
So that the model we have now has to really disintegrate.
Wow.
In order to create space for the new model of ministry to develop. And the new model of ministry will have to be a model based on equality and based on service.
Wow.
It's easy for me to talk.
Yeah, you know, and just getting back to what you said about the proliferation of feminist theologians, given Pope Francis's seeming allergy to the word feminism, we maybe should call them something else.
It's interesting, one of the speakers at the round table is an Italian theologian. Now, she was speaking in Italian, which I don't understand.
Yeah.
We were getting a translation. Marinella was the name. Jamie would probably tell you more who she is.
Mm-hmm.
But one of her wishes was that Francis wouldn't say anything about women anymore.
Wow.
That they talk to women, yeah. But don't please talk about women.
Fascinating.
Anymore.
Yeah, because it's not helpful.
Not a lot of what she's saying about women is not helpful. No. And, you know, in contrast to so much good that he's doing and saying in other areas of life, that this is a really blind spot with him.
Yeah.
And still, under Francis, we now have a situation where effectively there is free and open discussion.
Right.
On the whole issue of women and the church, which yeah. John Paul told us was
off limits.
It couldn't. Off limits, exactly.
Yeah.
So, at least. So, it's a very complex time in the church. There's a lot that's very positive, and then, on the other hand, there's still so much that would make you feel, oh, God, with no hope.
Right.
You know,
Well, you know what? If it takes an apocalypse like the kind you're hinting at here, let it come.
Yes. Let it come.
Amen.
I wonder, would it be nice to be alive for it, or would you be better off dead for it?
Yeah, all right.
Okay. Well, Miriam is looking at me here as much as to say, will you ever shut up? Can I hand you back to her?
Yes, please. Thank you so much,
okay,
Tony.
Thanks, Tony. Hi, Maria.
Oh, my gosh. Would you please just give him a hug for me right now?
Okay, hang on a second.
Yeah.
Stop, Tony. Stop it. I've been asked to give you a hug on behalf of Maria. Thank you very much. Okay, I gave him a good one.
Good. You're listening to a report from Rome, where last week, women's ordination worldwide held a counter-event to the Vatican's Jubilee for Priests. Called the Jubilee for Women Priests, it drew worldwide press attention, and as an added bonus, nobody was led away by Rome police, as happened on a previous occasion when members of the organization dared to stand in St. Peter's Square while bishops were gathered there for a synod. Women's Ordination Worldwide spokeswoman Miriam Deignan describes the whole Roman love fest. Next. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM, Middletown, providing community radio that matters, and WHUS, 91.7 FM, Storrs, Yukon's radio for the people.
So we started at 3:00. We had a round table discussion. So Kate McElvey has chaired it. She's from Women's Ordination Conference here in Rome, based here in Rome now. So we had an Italian speaker, which is fabulous, Dr. Marinella Peroni, excellent, from a pontifical university. So a very well-respected, well-known theologian in Italy.
Is she the one that Tony said advised Pope Francis just to stop talking about women?
That was her gentle suggestion that it might be better,
okay.
You know, just to stop pontificating
just stop.
On women.
Yeah, literally. All right. And who are the others?
Yes. And then we had Tony Flannery, Father Tony Flannery, of course. And then we had the Reverend Dana English, who is an ordained Anglican minister here in Rome, in a very large, wonderful church here in Rome, who gave some great insight into how she sees the situation for women in the Catholic Church and here in Rome, how she feels here in Rome, and her journey through ordination and why she feels it's so important. And then we had Jamie Manson, who is the columnist for National Catholic Reporter.
Right.
And she spoke more about her personal calling to priesthood. So it was, we had theology, we had pastoral perspective, we then had the Anglican perspective from a woman who's already done it and felt the calling very strongly. And then we had a perspective of Jamie, who is a Roman Catholic woman who has the equivalent training of a priest, obviously with a Masters of Divinity from Yale,
right.
And what it feels like to be constantly told that you are unqualified for priesthood, despite being on paper very qualified and having the call and having the skills, having the experience, but because you happen to be born in a woman's body, what it feels like to be constantly told you can't join a role that there is much needed and in the church because you're a woman. And so we had that roundtable debate. We then took questions from the media. There's quite a lot of media here.
Good.
And they had some very interesting questions. We then had some questions from the audience, which was fascinating, you know, ranging from why on earth do you stay in the church? We talked about women deacons. What would that mean? We had questions from a woman from Naples and an older lady from Naples who said she knows a priest who on the altar kisses his own hand because he said, I represent Jesus, so I'm kissing Jesus' hand. You know, the very extreme of clericalization and absolute worship of themselves.
Oh,
it's a very extreme example, but she said, she used it as an example of why we have to dismantle the clericalism and we have to dismantle this concept of priesthood as separate and elite and as a high status role. So it was wonderfully interesting. We then moved into the courtyard to have drinks. So we've been serving cocktails. And Maria, you would love this. And this is where I wish you had been here.
Mm-hmm.
We had two WOW signature cocktails. One of them was called Strawberries on the Cake. And that's Prosecco with strawberries. And that's from a quote from Pope Francis, who said that women theologians are like the strawberries on the cake. He said that in December 2014, that we love women theologians. We'd love to have more of them, but there's very few of them. But they're like strawberries on the cake. They make the cake better. So we said that. And when I said that to Dr. Marinella Peroni, that you are the strawberries on the cake, when I gave her a drink, she said, no, I am the cake. I am the cake. So that was very funny. And our second WOW signature cocktail is Feminine Genius. And that's blackcurrant cordial mixed with Prosecco. And so we've been serving an option of Feminine Genius or strawberries on the cake.
Well, explain
for our reception.
Explain about Feminine Genius.
Feminine Genius is also something that Pope Francis says a lot. And he uses it to say, well, women are special and separate, and they don't need to have clerical roles or be involved in the church because they are, they have feminine genius. And he says it quite often. We use a specific quote on our little cocktail sheet. But excuse me, Maria, there's lots of children screaming. They're coming out of nursery and they've all gone a bit.
That's fine. No, it adds to the texture.
You know what it's like at going home time. So we served cocktails in the courtyard, beautiful courtyard, and now Julia Bianchi, who has created the beautiful posters of women priests. She's giving an exhibition and a talk. The photos that have been put up on poster boards all around Rome.
Yeah.
And so she's doing that exhibition right now and explaining her photos. So we got authorization from the city officials to hang these posters. There's 100 of them. They're a meter long. And so that's been the build-up to our event has really been the media focus and people wandering around Rome looking for the women priest posters.
Oh.
So that's happening now, and then we'll close by 8 o'clock, and then we'll all go for dinner.
What will you do in your closing?
Well, we'll probably have more Prosecco. And then, of course, on Friday, we have another event. We have a witness at 8 o'clock in the morning, and we're going to have a visual guide to opening the door to dialogue, and then we're going to go up the pilgrim's path to St. Peter's Basilica in time for the Jubilee Mass for priests, and we also have a permit for that. So that's our plans to carry on and finish these 3 days of the Jubilee for Women Priests.
Wow. Literally, wow.
Yes, wow, that's us.
It's a far cry, it sounds like, from being arrested practically the last time you tried to be a presence in the square.
Well, I mean, exactly, isn't it? Because right now we're hopeful we're not going to get detained at all. We have a permit.
Fantastic.
And a pilgrim's ticket to go in the Year of Mercy pilgrim route. And so it's all looking good. I mean, watch this space. We'll let you know how it goes. But, you know, it's a big difference. We've come very far. And the city officials of Rome, Kate here in Rome has been dealing with them. She said they're unbelievably sympathetic. They're so supportive of us. Actually, the man who works in the city, the town hall, who's been processing the application for an authorization to hang the posters, he's here with us this afternoon. He actually came.
What?
And he's been drinking with us in the courtyard. Yes, the city official who has processed our application to hang the posters of women priests, the RCWP women who've been ordained, he turned up to have a drink with us because he's been so supportive. He's told all his friends. He posted it on his Facebook page.
What?
These women are amazing. We have to support women priests. We'd love to see them ordained and you know, have more women in the church, and he came. So it's really been a miracle, Maria. It feels like a miracle what's happened this week. It's amazing.
It's fantastic. Wow, the Rome police have redeemed themselves.
Yes, totally. And then they gave us a permit to gather on Friday and have a, you know, witness and walk up to St. Peter's. So
what will that be like, the witness?
Well, we're going to wear purple stoles and gather, and we have a way to visually show the daughter dialogue. The whole theme is about the daughter dialogue and how we're going to visually, you know, make sure that people understand that women need to be involved, and we're going to engage with the public, and we're hoping there's going to be quite a lot of us, even though it's 8 o'clock on Friday morning.
I crossed paths with Erin. And she told about this phone booth.
Yes.
Describe the pop-up phone booth.
Well, what it is, yes, it looks like a phone booth, but we're going to customize it a little bit so that it looks like a daughter dialogue. That's the intention, is that we haven't worked out the details yet because we're going to gather tomorrow. So tomorrow is to really figure out, you know, how we're going to visually give a guide to opening the daughter dialogue.
So you're at a hotel in Rome that's, I'm guessing, outside the Vatican walls.
We're at a place called the International House for Women. It's a beautiful building in the middle of Trastevere, which is a region in Rome that's just down the road from St. Peter's. And a lot of people are staying here, and they've rented us an office space for 2 weeks. So we've actually got a headquarters in Rome.
Wow.
For 2 weeks, which is the first time we've been able to do that. It's been wonderful to be here, you know, to actually have a headquarters, to all be able to gather in an office and plan and work together. It's been amazing.
Did you get a good turnout?
Yes, we had a beautiful turnout today, and we had a lot of journalists, actually. There's a great media interest in it. So, no, it's been wonderful, Maria. Actually, I have Jamie Manson. She's just appeared before me, so shall I hand you over to her?
Sure. Thank you, Miriam.
Maria, it's lovely to talk to you. Thanks for your support. I'll hand you over.
Okay. Bye. Ciao.
All right. Bye.
This is a visit to Rome, courtesy of three participants in Women's Ordination Worldwide's Jubilee for Women Priests, which took place last week. National Catholic reporter columnist Jamie Manson talks about the panel she was part of, among other topics, including her own vocation to the priesthood and why women's ordination is crucial to the future of the Catholic Church. This is Reasonably Catholic, Keeping the Faith, coming to you from Wesleyan University's WESU, 88.1 FM Middletown, providing community radio that matters, and WHUS, 91.7 FM Stores, Yukon's radio for the people.
Can we try just a little bit harder? Can we give just a little bit more? Can we try?
You know, I think of you, Jamie, as our Catholic Rachel Maddow.
Oh.
You're so smart.
That is a beautiful comparison.
Well, don't you see a similarity? So articulate. So, I mean, really, you speak for so many of us and so well. Even though the column that I'm going to reference with you here, and it was emailed to me, your column about how, you know, we ought to really... what was the headline? Hold on. I took a picture of it, a screenshot of it, because, it's time to be honest about Pope Francis and women.
Right.
Wow. And my friend who emailed it to me to make sure I didn't miss it says, sad but true, you know, that really, and I confess, I think I was among those who, when he said he's willing to open, you know, discussion to the subject of women deacons, I said, oh, wow, yay. But I didn't look.
Right. So many people did, Maria. You were hardly alone.
Oh, but really, when you look at what he's saying, he's making it sound like women deacons in ancient days were nothing more than kind of a gym locker room attendant.
And very woman-oriented. When you look at the script, he says those women helped with the baptizing women because they would, you know, they were, those women were not clothed because baptism at that time was a full immersion, and
right.
so they would, there were some, you know, issues of discretion about women's bodies being
right.
unclothed. And the other role of the deaconess was to, if there was a suspicion that a woman was being abused by her husband, her job was to look at the woman's bruises on her body to confirm if she was being abused by her husband. And this is what Pope Francis said in that interview. It was really interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just going to quote from your column for people who haven't read it. The beautiful, tragic summation of it all, which is, quote,
yeah.
Francis's theological imagination makes it impossible for women to achieve equal decision-making power and sacramental authority in this church, and it's time we faced it. And you conclude by saying, and Tony Flannery, I think, is in agreement, that the future of the church depends on it.
Yes. Absolutely. The future of the church depends on it. I also think the future of women in some ways depends on it because, you know, this is a point I make often, Maria, is that making women equal in the Catholic Church is about even more than simply making women priests. It's about a church of 1 billion people with an extraordinarily charismatic, influential pope saying to cultures across the world that women are truly equal. That they should not be subservient,
right.
that they should not be seen as less than men.
Yeah.
Because the truth is, and you know this well, that women suffer disproportionately from violence, from lack of education,
right.
from poverty, from sex trafficking, the issue, you know, name your issue, and women
right.
suffer disproportionately from it. Imagine, Maria, if a church of 1 billion people with this pope of this kind of influence were to say that women were truly equal and say it to every culture in the world.
Yeah.
How
know.
That would lift up women globally, even beyond the priesthood. That's, for me, the heart of the issue.
It's such a powerful and persuasive argument, and no less than Jimmy Carter has made it in a full-blown book, you know?
Exactly. Call to action. That's right.
So, and I just want to believe that the Pope hears and reads this kind of thing. Do you have any evidence that he's at all tuned in to? I mean, you make it sound like he's utterly allergic to the word feminism.
He is. So he says that there is, he often apologizes when he speaks about women and says, I'm not being feminist here.
Ugh.
But in Amoris Laetitia, this document that came out last month, they did say that there are certain forms of feminism that should be rejected. But, you know, the patriarchal culture and the harm it's caused should also be rejected, and that there is a certain sense the spirit has moved in the women's movement. So I think that really if he's allergic to a term, and I'm speculating just based on everything I've read, and I've read everything he said about this,
yeah.
It's his sense of what he would call radical feminism,
okay.
is my sense.
Okay.
Now, to me, radical feminism is not a bad thing. You know, it's about
right.
eradicating inequality.
Yeah.
But there seems to be those terms still at play. He's never used the term radical feminism, but he has said clearly, even in Amoris Laetitia, that there are forms of feminism that are not acceptable.
Okay. Well, that's very generous of you to grant that he may be.
Thank you. A rare moment.
No, it's really a kind of discerning view of things that I appreciate.
Yeah.
Because we can, I'm sure you see in the political realm, we can latch on to words and turn people into cartoons. And it's,
that's true.
Yeah. Wow.
That's true.
Well, let's turn our attention to the event where you're speaking. What's your sense of how things are going there?
Well, I think they are going marvelously well. I think it's interesting, Julia Bianchi's series of posters and her artwork, I should say, and the posters based on her artwork have been a very important, have captured the imagination in a way that I think is singular and has attracted attention to the event that may not have been attracted. And I think it really speaks to our culture now and how image-oriented we are and how video-oriented we are, that in so many ways Julia's images capture, you know, an entire conference on women and women's equality in one image.
And they're posted
and
all over the city.
There are, there are posters all over the city. People are seeing them, and they are provocative in the most wonderful sense of the word.
Maybe she'll give me permission to post one on the blog.
Well, they're all over the WOW Facebook page and the WOC Facebook page. So Julia has been wonderful about getting them out everywhere. And we went and posed in front of them yesterday, Miriam and Aaron and Kate, and me and Julia and other members of WOW. So we're trying our best to get them out there on social media. Also, there's been wonderful coverage of them before they were posted last week, which you probably saw. The Guardian covered it. And,
I was going to ask, was it international coverage or just Italian?
Absolutely. Massive international coverage. Spain, France, Germany. Who else? The U.S., apparently Seth Doan from CBS News is supposed to cover them.
Oh, cool.
So at some point, I know, CBS is such a good news outlet. So they are capturing imaginations in a way that I think just a conference alone could not have. So they're really stimulating people's consciousness in a very special way.
So just to make the connection, this is a jubilee for women priests because right now at the Vatican there's a jubilee for priests going on. Is
correct?
That, okay.
Yeah.
And that is a celebration. I mean, when I hear jubilee, I think of kind of milestone anniversaries. Is that
exactly?
Okay. So this is a
go ahead.
No,
Maria.
No. Explain.
Do you want me to explain?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
It's Catholic weirdness. you can quote me. so every, I don't know how many years, 10, don't quote me on this, but every certain number of years, the Vatican celebrates what they call a jubilee year. Right, so you're right. A jubilee is usually an anniversary of some kind. Mm-hmm. So this year is a jubilee year, 2016, and Pope Francis decided to make the year about mercy. Jubilee year of mercy is what it's called. And so there are multiple celebrations being held throughout this church year. It just so happens that this week is the jubilee for priests, and so that was why very intentionally WOC and WOW planned their jubilee for women priests to coincide with the jubilee for priests.
I see.
So in a very clever way, they have used Pope Francis's words, because Pope Francis, when he announced the Jubilee Year of Mercy, said quite clearly, the door of mercy is closed to no one. And of course, ironically, the Pope has also said, the door to the priesthood is closed to women. So they're doing a really great job of playing on the Pope's own words. He says the door of mercy is closed to no one, but he says the door to women priests is closed. So they planned it really well to coincide with this jubilee for priests, which is happening tomorrow, on Friday. And we will be we'll be among the pilgrims at that very big mass celebrating priests.
Outside in the square?
Exactly. Yeah, awesome. We have tickets to be on the square Friday morning.
Gosh.
Yeah.
I must have a photo. Please make sure someone emails me a photo.
Oh, there will be so many photos, Maria.
Okay,
you'll be inundated, I promise you.
So just when I hear women priests, I think of our own movement of women priests. Are there any representatives of that among you?
Yes, there are two. You probably know Janice Severy-Dushinska.
I don't, but I look forward to it.
Well, she is the woman, she's been very closely associated with Roy Bourgeois.
Ah, ah.
And it was Janice's ordination that got Roy Bourgeois into a lot of trouble,
yeah.
You know, with his order and with the Vatican. And she is a very, very deeply committed witness for justice. She's had many, many years with Roy on the School of the Americas Witnesses. And she's also a very, very passionate witness on behalf of women priests. And she is a Roman Catholic woman priest herself.
Okay.
In addition to her, there is a woman named Christina Morera.
Okay.
And she is, let's see if I can get this right. She's French, lived in Spain, but now is in Colombia. And she is a Roman Catholic woman priest.
Okay.
And they'll be joining in the... That witness and the time on St. Peter's Square on Friday.
I wish I could be there.
I know, it's good times, Maria.
The future holds more such events, I'm sure. So, so what else have you got on pressing on your brain these days, Jamie?
Oh gosh, you know it's been a really tricky time, you know, because there's an extraordinary hope for Pope Francis.
Yeah.
I think there's a deep, deep hunger for hope.
Right.
I think the media have done an interesting job of focusing on hopeful words of Pope Francis, but not fully covering everything he's saying.
Maybe that's a function of how desperate we are for any little glimmer, you know.
I think it really speaks to that, Maria. I think you're right on target about that. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, we shouldn't be blind. We have to see them. And thank you for making us see it. I'd like to reprint your article on the blog, if that's okay, your column.
Oh, please, anytime, like anything.
Okay, right,
beautiful. I'm very grateful, always.
Tell me.
It was a good response to that, though. I was pleasantly surprised.
Well, people were agreeing, I'm sure, that, yeah.
Yeah, they did.
Sad,
I did not
true.
Really get a lot of detractors on it. It was interesting.
Tell me about your own vocation.
Ooh, I know. It's a tricky one. You know, it continues to be an ongoing discernment. I continue to live in the tension of one foot in the church and one foot out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still feel called to be a priest. Mm-hmm. I am, you know, trying to fulfill some of those desires in new ways. I'm doing quite a bit of work with Dignity New York, which is a LGBT Catholic organization. It's 40 years old now. And they just decided to accept lay presiders. And so I am one of the first set of their lay presiders. And so I am leading masses now, though not as a formally ordained person.
In New York City?
Yeah.
Oh, I must know.
For Dignity.
I'm going to come.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I have to make another date with them. I did my first liturgy with them on Mother's Day, and now they're wanting me to make another date. And I'm part of a cohort of about five other lay Dignity members who have started doing this. And so it's a real milestone for Dignity New York specifically.
And how about for you personally? I mean, that must have felt so great.
It's a, you know, I know this sound may sound silly, but it's fun. It's just fun, you know. It's a community I've known for 10 years, and they're people I really love and have worked with and respect, and they've shown me tremendous support over the years. And it's just nice to function for them.
Wow. Wow.
And it's nice because I'll tell you, Maria, 10 years ago, they were not ready for any lay person to stand in front of them and read the words of institution and consecrate Eucharist. And suddenly they have realized, not so suddenly, but over the last few years, there's been a transformation of consciousness. I think that's very exciting. And
that surprises me that they've had to. make that growth spurt, because I didn't realize.
I know. It is significant. And, I mean, some of us have been working on them for a while to sort of say, you know, you're outside the church. You were expelled from the church. Why not use this in a radically new and inclusive way?
Yeah.
And I've been working particularly hard with Dignity, as have people like Mary Hahn and Dignity USA's executive director, Marion Duddy Burke. We've been working hard to help particularly the gay men see the connection between women's equality and LGBTQ equality, because in so many ways we're fighting the same theological ideas. The same theological ideas oppress us.
Yeah,
I hope to write a column actually about that in the near future. And so I think that's making those connections, particularly for the gay men, has been very important. And I guess, you know, in Dignity New York, they started a lay-led liturgy that would meet once a month. And so many of the men started going to it, and so many of them really liked it, that I think that started the transformation of consciousness. It was held not in the church they meet in, it was actually held at the LGBT Center in New York City.
Okay.
And so many of the longtime members started to go to it, liked it, loved having women in leadership, wanted women to minister to them. And now it has sort of in this remarkable way transferred over to the more formal Dignity Mass. And,
wow.
and it's just been incredible.
I mean, how can you not believe the Spirit is at work there?
I couldn't agree more. Couldn't say it better myself. Yeah. Yeah, it's really powerful. And I don't even think that any of us have reckoned yet with how powerful it is.
Yeah.
Apparently there'll be a town meeting in a few weeks to sort of sit with it and process it a bit. And I'll be very curious to hear what the community says about it.
Hmm. You know, talking with Tony earlier, he was waxing a little apocalyptic about what has to happen in the church before we can really have change, significant change on this front, this gender equality front, and how really
right.
Maybe the whole thing has to just crash and burn before something can rise from the ashes. And then there's, you know, the whole idea of whether priests are even necessary. What are your thoughts along those lines?
Well, you know, I shared this actually in our session today.
Have you moved to another place?
I didn't move, but I noticed
okay.
We're having static, aren't
yeah,
we?
Yeah, we are.
Let me move
okay.
again.
Okay.
I actually didn't. I swear to you, Maria, I stayed put for you. But
bless
let me
you.
Move and let's see if my connection gets better.
Okay.
Okay. Is this any better where I am now?
No, it's still kind of buzzy.
Okay.
But I can
keep
hear
talking
you.
And see if
yeah.
we can get a good connection.
Right. I think people will hear you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
you were saying you spoke about this at the panel.
I did, and I brought up something actually a bit heavy, but I think it's been something that has been in my consciousness for years now, and that is, I told the audience about Sandy Hook and that terrible massacre of the children at Sandy Hook in Connecticut a few years ago. And what struck me about that story, because I followed it very, very closely, was that when that happened, the people did not run to the police. They did not run to their neighbors. They ran to their churches. And people, to me, instinctively they ran to their churches. And to me it really spoke to, my God, we need the best, the most gifted, the most sensitive, pastoral people in priesthood, because people still instinctively, in times of incredible violence and stress and suffering, still instinctively move to the church.
Yeah.
Now, that's a very dramatic example, but the truth of the matter is that people turn to the church in their hours of greatest suffering and greatest joy.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's a wedding or a baptism, a funeral or an anointing of the sick,
right.
You know, or less rites. People need, these are the moments, these are the most crucial moments of people's lives. And we need the very, very best ministers and priests to guide people and comfort them and give those moments meaning.
Mm.
And so I do believe there's still a need for priests. I think it's a very special calling. I don't think many people have the gift
right.
for it.
Clearly.
I think it's a very special gift.
Yeah.
So I do see a need for it, because I think people are hungry and people are in need,
yeah.
And those needs are never going to go away. So,
interesting.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about a different kind of model, though, where we can still have that. Oh, no static.
Oh, thank God.
Where we can still have that support and succor, but not a priesthood.
Yes, that's right. Well, yeah, I think there needs to be leadership. I think there needs to be sacramental leadership. I think the sacraments are still rites of passage that people long for as human beings, as part of our legacy as human beings, our history. But whether it's going to look like the priesthood as we know it, I don't know. But I think, Maria, the sooner you can involve women, in the better.
Yeah.
And let women transform it. Let women meet the challenges of what it means to transform it. Just let women in and let them in now. I'm of that mind.
Well, so. Amen, sister. I just have one more thought, and it goes back to what you said about having one foot in the church and one foot out. I can't really imagine that you would ever leave.
Well, I think that... I don't even know what it means anymore to leave the Catholic Church, because you and I have talked about this previously. Catholicism is such a deeply embedded identity in us. It's like, can you leave being Italian? Can you leave being Jewish? Do you know what I mean? I don't know if you ever can leave.
No, it's in your
once
bones.
Once it's imprinted itself in your consciousness, you know, it's sacramental view of the world, you know, it's sense of the sacred, it's sense of all of the world, being able to communicate God's presence. I don't know if you can ever leave that kind of vision once you embrace it.
Yeah.
Or if you don't, even if you don't embrace it, some people haven't, and they don't even, not even conscious of it. So I have decided that I don't know what leaving means anymore.
Interesting.
You know, So, and I'm one of those strange weirdos that likes to live in tension, apparently. So.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Believe me, I am with you. Yeah, wow.
Well, you know, Richard Rohr, the Franciscan, says that prophets live in a liminal space.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're on a margin. They have one foot in the formal institution and one foot outside. And that still is a pretty comfortable place for me, you know?
Let me ask you, because, and here I'm going to project probably my own feeling of relief about having a radio show where I can just kind of vent. You know, I go see a movie like Spotlight, and then I'm able to talk to people about it and just kind of survive another day.
Right.
Do you feel that way in your columnist life? Just grateful that you have this outlet where you can just kind of unpack things that are...
Yes, I am very grateful. First of all, if you're a religion writer, you're always grateful that you have some kind of form of work.
Yeah.
because religion writing is always under, you know, stress. But also, I am grateful that in my commentary, I have been able to say what I believe.
Right.
And over the years, have been able to cultivate enough of a following that I can still publish. And I, you know, to this day, in my commentary, I have still never been censored by NCR. And I do believe NCR is the last Catholic publication that would publish, the only one still that would publish someone with my profile.
Right.
Openly lesbian,
yep.
Radically feminist, or just feminist, if you ask me.
Right.
And so I still am very grateful, you know, and I know that it's extremely unusual, and it's getting rarer to be able to speak so plainly in a Catholic publication, and especially where I'm coming from. So,
well,
yeah.
Ad multos annos.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Maria. I appreciate it. It's always a pleasure to talk
Same
with you.
Same here. That was an interview with Jamie Manson, and before that, with Miriam Deignan and Father Tony Flannery, all of whom took part in a counter-event, the Jubilee for Women Priests, in answer to the Vatican's Jubilee for Priests, held across town. If you missed part of the episode or want to listen again, you can find the audio archived at reasonablycatholic.com, where I'll also post photos from the event, Jamie Manson's column about why Pope Francis is maybe not women's best friend, and other bells and whistles of interest. Thanks for listening. I'm Maria Johnson. Stay tuned for The Jive at 5, followed by Acoustic Blender with Bill Revel.